Heating can be reached at 825-0759 or at Scherfield Solar and Heating.com. 7 o'clock. Thursday Night Talk starts right now. And welcome to Thursday Night Talk here on KHSU. Tonight, Tom Wheeler is our host. We welcome your contributions. Once Tom opens the phone lines, you can give us a call at 826-4805. If you're out of the area, toll free at 800-640-5911. Or you can text us at 492-KHSU.
All right. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk. I have a dream team of political analysts here with me tonight. We have Sierra Emery and Nick Thomas from Humboldt State University Dems and the new Young Dems chapter. We have Hank Sims, editor-in-chief of the Lost Coast Outpost, and we have Matthew in the middle, Matthew Owen, joining me in this studio. So thank you all for joining me.
Thanks for having
Thanks
me.
For having Thanks. Us.
Thank you.
All right. Now you sounded very excited about that. But that's okay. We're talking about the midterm elections. This is our post-election debrief. What did the results tell us about the country? And what did the results tell us about Humboldt County? So let's start with the country. Was it a blue wave, Matthew Owen?
It was a blue wave in California. It was a blue surge in the country. But it was also a pink surge, as 15 of the 23 congressional seats that flipped were for women, Democratic women.
Okay. Hank, do you think that we had... Did we live up to the kind of expectations?
I guess so. I don't know. It's kind of off my beat, so I don't think I have anything intelligent and certainly not anything original to say about it. But it seems as though people agree that it was a good night for Democrats.
Well, so it seemed like a good night for House Democrats, and it's only getting better for House Democrats. We've, as California's counting more ballots, we are kind of a late reporter. We keep seeing Democrats picking off incumbents. The Senate was a little bit disappointing. Nick, do you want to talk about the Senate races you were watching and what you think they said about the country? Maybe Florida, you know, Bill Nelson, is that state becoming more red?
Yeah, that, Florida's definitely been trending red. Granted, it has been controlled by the Republicans for a long time. I think the last Democratic governor was back in the 1990s, so that tells you a lot. With a lot of the other Senate races, we definitely saw that Democrats had a really tough map. They lost seats in Indiana, Missouri, North Dakota, which definitely were going to be tough lifts regardless. But I think it really hits on the fact that the House map and the Senate map were very different. Democrats did really well in the suburbs, made a lot of gains, but that wasn't necessarily indicative in those Senate races. And they definitely had some good results. Arizona, flipping Arizona was a big deal.
And Nevada.
Yeah, and Nevada as well. And then we'll see what happens in Florida. Most likely Rick Scott will win, but... Bill Nelson came pretty close. We'll see.
And I think the news that was breaking this evening was it looks like DeSantis is going to win the governor's election, beating Gillum, the progressive Democratic mayor of Tallahassee. And we will see for the Senate race, but it is not looking good for the Democratic Party there. Okay, we are going to play a game, and this is a game that I stole from the 538 podcast, so shout out to them, Nate Silver, and all those folks. We are going to draft our 2020 presidential candidates for the Democratic side. So we're going to go around in order. Matthew Owen, to my right, is going to be pick number one, and then Hank, you're going to be pick number four, and then for round two, we're going to come back the other way. All right, so Matthew, with the number one pick in the 2020 Democratic draft, who do you think is most likely going to be the Democratic nominee for president?
Well, first off, I want to say no B's. No Bernie, no Biden, and no Beto. We need to have winners run for office. I'm going to say the front runner is going to be Kamala Harris right now, and that's going to be my number one pick.
All right, Nick?
Okay, since Kamala's off the board, I guess I'll go with Elizabeth Warren.
Okay, Warren. All right, I should probably be writing these down. Harris, Warren... All right, Sierra.
Can I give a quick explanation?
Yeah, please. Did I not introduce this well enough?
No, so I'm going to break the B rule. I'm going to say Beto. Look, 3.7 million more people voted in Texas than in the last midterm.
And he lost.
against 3.7 more people voted in Texas than the last midterm. So I just think people could be excited. People could be excited about
it. With this blue wave, it should have been a landslide.
I don't know about that, but
I think that Beto could have run a better campaign. He came out for a number of really hard left progressive causes that probably didn't endear him to Texas voters, right? We don't need to endorse impeachment if you're running for the Texas Senate seat.
I would also point out, though, that he did better than any Senate candidate in Texas in years. And actually, the turnout that he drove pushed the Texas Democratic Party years forward. I mean, we're talking about Texas potentially becoming a purple state. Beto's campaign did that in a lot of ways.
When I talk to nonpartisan people, people who are not embedded in the Democratic Party, they get excited about him. And so that's what makes me think that maybe he would be a good contender. Would he win the primary? I don't know. That was your question. But I'm putting him up there for that reason.
Okay. So we have Harris, Warren, Beto.
Amy Klobuchar.
Oh, that's a pick I really do love.
Thank you.
So she is the Democratic senator from Minnesota.
She is from Minnesota. She's from a swing state, maybe, and she seems very sensible. I think she came up very well in the Kavanaugh hearings. Uh-huh. She's a very sensible, smart person. No nonsense. Let's try that.
She took Minnesota by what did she get, like 60% or something?
Yeah, it was a very large margin, and there was also a special election going on there too, with the appointed senator. I forget her name. She took over for Al Franken.
Smith, maybe.
Yeah, and it was Klobuchar's margin was much larger.
Great.
And she even took some of the Iron Range congressional districts, which are generally more working class, well, which Trump won.
I feel confident now. Thank you.
we obviously have a political nerd on our hands over here. Thank you, Nick. All right. Well, sorry to turn the attention back to you again, Hank, but this is the way that the draft works, fairness.
Yeah.
You get pick number two to start off the second round.
Kristen Gillibrand.
Ooh, Gillibrand. All right. Any thoughts on that from the peanut gallery?
Silence.
None. How?
She's a woman. Look, she's a woman. Time. People like her. She has had a history of having both conservative and, liberal policies. So she could play to a lot of different
sides.
So
she's flip floppy.
I didn't say that, but.
Yeah, and when she was in the House, she was a member of the Blue Dog Coalition. So yeah. I think in a Democratic primary, that'll come back to haunt her.
So I lived in upstate Vermont for a while, and she was the House member right across the border, and I never was terribly impressed by her, and that she became this kind of liberal lion from New York when she got to the Senate always seemed weird to me, so I fundamentally distrust her, but she is a good pick.
Oh, thank you.
For the Democratic nominee. All right, Sierra, back to you. Who's your number two?
I'm going to say Joe Biden.
Oh, there's our second B. All right.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm just breaking all the rules. Look, Joe Biden is polling really well. People like Joe Biden. He has a lot of skeletons in his closet. I mean, there's a lot of things that, might come back to cause problems with him. But he's polling really well in some of the early polls. So he's funny. He's like America's dad.
He's really, he's so sweet and charismatic. He's funny. It's hard not to just kind of fall in love with him. I think about, what's that show? Parks and Recreation and Leslie Knope always having a crush on Joe Biden. And I feel like largely the same way. All right, Nick. All right. So we have Harris, Warren, Beto, Klobuchar, Gillibrand, and Biden.
Okay. I'm going with the B as well. Bernie Sanders.
Ooh,
mainly because he starts off with a very dedicated group of supporters. If there's a huge field for the Democratic primary, he has the potential to really solidify at least a percentage of it, which is sometimes all you need. You look at the 2016 GOP primary, and Donald Trump did not start out with that huge percentage of support. He was kind of scraping by until the field winnowed, and he was ahead. So that could potentially happen again. We'll see.
I just worry that people are tired of like a 2016 primary rehashing. I wonder if...
And he's not a Democrat.
Yeah, and he's not a Democrat.
Yeah, I mean, that's the weakness, but we're getting down to number seven or so, right?
You're right.
Are we going to pick John Delaney? I don't know.
We don't really have a deep bench here on the Democratic Party, and that's part of our problem. Okay, so Bernie Sanders. you know, this is ageist, but I think he's probably just too old. I worked for Bernie Sanders' 2006 Senate campaign, and I love the man. I wouldn't vote for him.
But you see a lot of these other people who want to run, Cory Booker, Kirsten Gillibrand, all trying to model his policies.
Oh, what's Booker, one of your Bs?
Well, Booker was going to be a B that won a race, not lost a race.
Okay. All right, well, so Matthew Owen, is Booker your next pick?
I was going to say Cory Booker's going to be my next pick because I think the Democrats definitely need to go something of a person of color, and I'd prefer a woman, but that's just me.
Okay, well, so maybe that's Kamala Harris. And that was your leadoff batter, too, so...
And I'm going to say this, and my deep bench is going to be Gavin Newsom. He's just priming this to California's stepping stone. Maybe not 2020, 24, 28, but...
He did promise to serve 8 years if he was reelected, so that could be down the road.
I really
2028.
I really liked the way that Booker and Harris interacted with each other at the Kavanaugh hearings. They have, like, this really interesting dynamic where they were both sort of going at it, and they're like... I don't know. I think it might be kind of cool if they ran together. I don't know how feasible that is, but they have a cool relationship.
Who's going to be top of the ticket?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to go with Harris.
All right.
Women power.
So here is the pick that no one talked about, which is surprising to me. Sherrod Brown, Democratic senator from Ohio, just won.
Ask Nick.
I made the same complaint with the 538 podcast. And I think, okay, so he did underperform a little bit in his Senate race. He only won by like 6 or 7%, which granted, it is Ohio.
It was Ohio. I mean, DeWine won the governor's race there.
Yeah, and granted, Cordray was a Elizabeth Warren acolyte. Uh-huh. He was in charge of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So, I mean, Sherrod Brown could appeal to that Rust Belt voter, which could play really well. I just don't see him getting through a Democratic primary.
All right, well, that's my pick. And my second pick, I'm not actually part of the game, but I just want to be part of it so bad, is Jay Inslee from Washington. And that's Homerism. I'm from Seattle originally. And
who?
Jay Inslee, governor of Washington, former House member.
He chaired the Democratic Governors Association. Everyone knows Jay Inslee.
Guy, you are so nerdy. All right. Well,
thank you.
So,
Hank needs a second pick.
I'm running out of names. Oprah.
Okay. Although, fair guess. Yeah. Or The Rock. You know, Donald Trump became president, man. Anything is possible.
What about Michelle Obama?
Oh, yeah. She has high favorables.
I would love that. She's not going to run.
No.
But I love that.
I don't think she ever really liked the limelight when she was first lady. More than Melania, but...
She recently said that she didn't expect President Obama to even win. And that's why she was okay with him running.
So, did she say that really?
Yeah.
In her book?
It was in one of her interviews for the book.
And for the record, Melania said that November 2016.
Yeah. All right. So, now, will Trump be the 2020 nominee for the Republican Party?
No doubt.
No doubt?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will we have a serious challenger from the Republican Party?
Yes.
Define serious.
Oh, like a senator or a governor?
Probably.
I'm guessing Ben Sasse, maybe?
Maybe Jeff Flake.
Maybe Jeff Flake, yeah.
Everyone loves to throw out John Kasich as well. I mean, none of them will win.
Yeah, I was
going to
throw John Kasich there.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, John Kasich.
They won't win, but they'll run against
maybe
him.
John Kasich will win Ohio again.
So there are not enough people like... my uncle anymore who exists, who, you know, my uncle was this insurance salesman, you know, your kind of old school country club Republican who was turned off by Trump. There's not enough of those left in the Republican Party that would go out in the primary or the caucus to take back the party from Trump.
The Republican Party is no longer the country club Republicans, the chamber of commerce Republicans, the self-employed business people Republicans. It's now the party of Trump.
Okay.
And lower uneducated white women as well. They vote.
And men,
yeah. Yeah, so there's interesting class dynamics that some publications have been getting into, like 538, that kind of talk about the dynamics of, like, I think it was 538 that was talking about you could determine which counties voted for who based on if there's a Whole Foods, and Whole Foods was like an indicator of class.
Versus dollar store or something.
Yeah. So the way that the dynamics of the Republican Party changing are really interesting.
I think that maybe we're in an echo bubble thing here because I think all of us, with maybe the exception of Hank, are all listening to the 538 podcast. This is just great promo for them. I'm going to send them an invoice. All right. So do we have any broad themes that emerged from this national election? I know one of them was that's being talked about is that these Romney Clinton districts, those favored well for the Democrats, these suburban districts, where the Obama Trump districts, your more traditional working class districts, did not do well. Do we have any other broad themes that we can say from this election? Women turned out to vote. Was it another year of the woman?
Women turned out to vote. Unfortunately, millennials age 18 to 30 had about a 30% voter turnout. I can't get the people off their behinds to vote if they're on 30 or under. It's tough.
Don't worry, Sarah and I voted.
Okay. We voted.
I'm 31, so I guess I'm a little outside of that range, so I'm cool.
You're an old man now.
Yeah, exactly. I don't trust anybody under 30 now. I'm watching you too. All right. Well, let's open up the phone lines. We are at 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. Or you can text your question. And honestly, the texting of the question is maybe the best way to get your question asked. And that is 492-KHSU. All right, call in. Let's turn to the local elections. And when we're turning to the local elections, I think that it is perhaps fair to state your biases if you were connected to any campaigns, because I know a number of us were. I worked on behalf of Richard's campaign, Richard Marks for Harbor Commissioner, and Susan Seaman for mayor, and I'm friends with Natalie, and I'm friends with Leslie. So I'm pretty...
On a first-name basis.
Yeah, shoot. Yeah. I'm giving myself away. So I'm pretty deep in the Democratic or progressive pocket. Yeah.
Leslie's not a Democrat. Pointing that out.
She was a Democrat. Oh, I wish I could tell the story, but I don't think I have permission from her.
Not part of the blue wave.
She was a Democrat before this election and switched to the Green Party, but... I think that she's a Democrat. And, I mean, a Humboldt County Democrat and a Humboldt County Green Party member. I don't know, Matthew. I feel like we're splitting hairs here.
In the words of Willie Brown, if you follow Willie Brown, the former mayor of San Francisco, the local socialists and communists call themselves progressive Democrats to use the Democratic Party as a base because they don't have one.
Yeah, it sounds
That's
like me.
Willie Brown's words. And not mine.
All right, so the Communist Party, Tom Wheeler endorsed her. Anyways, so anybody else... Matthew, any connections to campaigns?
Well, yes. I know a lot of people in town. I usually have friends on both sides of the fence. And most of these races were over 3 months in advance. Just the people didn't know that. So, but in actually answer your question, let's see. I walked doors for Richard Marks, walked doors for Haley Lamb, especially worked on Measure I. By the way, I got pulled into that, I think, 3 weeks before the campaign was over. They said, help, there's nobody running Measure I. Can you help with it? And I'm going... Absentee ballots have already been mailed, guys. So we're going to get close to... We need 66.7% on that. That's the Eureka Road Tax.
And we're at 61.85% right now.
62, yeah. We're getting there, but we'll see.
We're close, and later breaking ballots usually go left, and left usually votes for taxes.
I just want my roads fixed. I'm embarrassed by the Eureka Road, so...
Yeah, 14th is pretty bad. Nick?
I was involved in Brett Watson's campaign here in Arcata, and then also Richard Marks's for Harbor District in Eureka.
Sierra?
Same for me, Brett Watson and Richard Marks.
And I imagine nothing because you're a journalist.
Yeah, I don't do that.
Although I learned tonight that you're my neighbor. I'm close by in Eureka, but we'll talk about our addresses off.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, that's too bad.
So, all right. We had potentially a progressive sweep of the Eureka elections. Well, Hank, you published a piece back in 2006 that it seemed resonant to me in this election. It was about the old guard of Eureka and the kind of backlash with losing power. And this is maybe a theme that we've seen in national elections as well, where white males have been losing power to women, to people of color, and have... responded with kind of a resentment vote and a move towards the Republican Party. Is this what this election was about?
Well, I think the Eureka is growing up and aging and has been since I wrote that in 2006. I went back and read that after you sent it out and said we're going to talk about it. So I went back and read it. And yeah, I think it holds up. Eureka is... is always on the verge, it seems like, for as long as I've lived here on this stint, you know, since about 2000, Eureka is always on the verge of becoming something else. And it's painful to a lot of people, and people fight back, and other people push forward and, you know, trying to push the city to grow and grow up. And I think that that is a lot of what this... I wouldn't say this is exactly what this election was about, but there was some of that dynamic at play, certainly.
And it seemed that we had kind of slates in this election.
Yeah.
We had the progressive slate, which was maybe best defined by the endorsements from the North Coast People's Alliance. It didn't strictly line up with the Humble Democratic Party endorsements. And then we had the Dream Team, as they called themselves, which were associated with a Facebook group, Take Back Eureka. Was Take Back Eureka part of the old guard, or is that something different?
I think it's myself. I think it's something different, and it's kind of like it's kind of built on. There were people maybe associated with that slate. I'm thinking of, you know, Mr. Bonino, Joe Bonino, who ran in the Fifth Ward, and John Fullerton, who have been around in Eureka and involved in Eureka politics for a very long time. And I think maybe they might not they were recruited into the slate because, you know, maybe no one else was running in that election that kind of their message resonated with the Take Back Eureka crowd. But I think it is sort of a newish phenomenon, and kind of like Trumpism born of the internet. And I think that in Eureka, anyway, I mean, the big takeaway I had from the Eureka elections was that this sort of push, there is a sort of wave of Facebook-based anger that really lost in the election.
And for this election, it reminded me of the silent majority. And so I kept thinking about those angry people on Facebook all throughout the election, because those were the ones that I was obsessing over. I nearly broke my phone going on Facebook too often. I had to delete the app because I was just becoming a crazy person. And so I was wondering at the end of the night how it was going to end up. My wife and I kind of agreed to ourselves that at least in the mayor's election, which was the one we cared most about, that it was going to be about 40-40 for Michelle Costantine and Susan Seaman, with Heidi Messner coming up somewhere down in the 20s. So I was surprised that it was not a more effective unit.
Yeah. No, I was too. And I wonder if some of that is, you know, a failure on the part of the, you know, the Dream Team, or that side, that sort of slate, that party in this election to sort of transcend Facebook and into the real world. I wonder if that was the case, or if it was just the case that the votes were never there for those candidates, that there are just not that many people angry about the direction that the city has been going. The city's been moving very fast lately. The city has changed a lot in the last 2 years. Eureka, a lot. The city staff, the elected officials, the city's moving very quickly in a certain direction. And it could be that people are generally very happy with the direction that the city's been moving. And so you were never going to get out of, you know, your sort of Facebook circles into the populace at large. Or it could be that they need to make that leap in a better way if they want to win elections.
Matthew, what do you think about the Eureka elections?
Well, I got a few things to say. First, you can't call yourself the Dream Team until you won something. That kind of just upset me, because I understand you want your candidates to win, but go win one or two elections by a big margin. Then you can actually say you're Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, well, Michael Jordan, etc.
People can dream, Matt.
You can dream, but you got to win first. Second thing, and I think the issue that I saw is, I respect what Take Back Eureka was trying to do. I think they got tainted by a lot of the angry people on Facebook who were not associated with that, but they let them post on their web pages. And I don't want to mention there's probably 10 names out there, and if you follow Eureka politics on Facebook, they're just angry, and 10 times a day they're spouting their anger. But it's just, okay, give me a solution. I get it, you're angry. You saw a needle on the street, or my God, there's a homeless guy doing a bad thing in the bushes there. Give me a solution. Don't just get angry. And I think part of the problem that Take Back Eureka had is just a lot of angry people. People kept saying, do you guys have a solution, or are you just going to be angry also? And I can't tell you what their message was today, post-election. I think that's the biggest problem.
I picked up two kind of resonant themes from candidates. One was an anti-needle or maybe that's unfair to them. Then a suspicious of Hatcher, the Humboldt Area Center for Harm Reduction.
Got that.
And H and I Street.
Got that too. And if you walked H and I Street, it's probably 50-50 of people who, there's people who want to see trees down the middle and traffic going both ways. There's people who want to see it reduced to two lanes, and there's people who are happy with three lanes. I'm not sure if that's a major campaign issue that's going to win you an election here in town.
No, it was taking. It was more of like the way it played out in the campaign is it was more like, I can't believe what these crazy people are doing with H and I Street. It wasn't anything about like actual, you know, sort of traffic analysis, but like it was kind of a grasping of the hair and saying like, my God, what are people? What is the world coming to? You know, there was more of that. And H and I Street. Oh my gosh,
it could have been a. I'm going to say it's politically correct. If I was on the other side running campaigns, there would have been a lot of negative ads and showing you the bad side of Eureka and naming the people who are in power now and just showing you the bad, doing a Trump on them. These are the people. This is what they're doing to Eureka over and over and over again. They didn't do that.
They didn't do that? I felt like this...
It could have been 10 times worse.
So my perspective, and I come from a very close perspective. I worked for Susan Seaman's campaign. My wife was Susan's campaign manager. We got a lot of nasty stuff come our way. I was doxxed. My personal information was put online. I had people call my office at Epic. I had people post articles that were written about my wife and I from like 10 years ago. We had our photos photoshopped. It was particularly nasty, but I suppose it didn't come from the right, kind of organs of the campaign.
It came from the 10 angry people out there, which I think kind of associated a taint to the campaigns.
So one of the things that was also tainted, perhaps, was one candidate in particular who seemed kind of a lightning rod.
I'll comment on that in a second.
And this was Anthony Mantova. He was running for Ward 1 against Haley Lamb and Leslie Castellano.
And
Carolyn Brooks.
Yes.
I won't forget all of them. There was a number of Facebook posts that he made or allegedly made that were publicized. And one of the kind of fascinating fights over this and it was whether or not reposting things that he had posted on Facebook up to 6 years ago was dirty politics. And some of these were legitimately offensive to me. And I won't go into them because it's probably boring to describe what a Facebook post looks like. But ultimately, a PAC, I believe, sent out a mailer to people in the first ward. Was this dirty politics? Is that how we should run elections?
Of course it's dirty politics, but dirty politics works.
Is it dirty politics, though, to point out something that somebody actually said?
I get banged all the time because I say the truth about what someone else has said. And they said, how dare you say that about them? So, yeah, I get that.
Okay.
Well, I don't follow. You get banged all the time because what?
Well, let's give an example. Sugno Madrone. There was a photo going around of him looking like an environmental radical hippie.
Yeah.
And people said, oh, you can't show that. It'll make him look like an environmental radical hippie. And I'm like, but that's what the photo is. Why are you not telling the truth?
Well, you have one photo. I don't know. I guess in
that's
case,
my
like,
point.
You have a photo. You have, well, all right. I mean,
I'm just saying that's the point. If I was Ryan Sunberg's campaign, I would have done that.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to elect a radical environmental hippie for your supervisor?
I mean, that's what the, I mean, you're saying that's what you do. I think there's a difference. I think there's a difference between somebody's writings and somebody's the things that they are consciously choosing to share on.
Understand.
And like a photo of you taken, okay, like in a bad moment, like you look funny. Like that's different. Saying offensive things is different than looking weird.
I'm really interested in how this dynamic and this conversation is going to change as younger and younger candidates get on the ballot. You know, Haley Lamb posted a lot of different things on her Facebook, and I was always really interested about you know, looking back at my own Facebook posts from like, you know, I've had a Facebook probably since like sixth grade. And sometimes things pop up on my feed and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so embarrassing. And, you know, Nick and I are the token millennials on this radio show right now. But I think as we have more and more elections with younger folks, I wonder if the conversations about what's on social media will almost lessen because we're just going to be saturated with social media information. I think.
I mean, and if that were, I mean, if you run for something someday, like, and you somebody digs up, oh, look at what she said in sixth grade. I mean,
yeah,
you can just say like, yeah, I said that in sixth grade.
Yeah,
I was.
Well, they tried to do that with Beto too. They were like, oh, look at this embarrassing band that he was in or something, and you know, most millennials just thought that was kind of cool. So
that band played Eureka, and I was at the show.
Oh yeah,
I still have the 7-inch. Yeah.
Cool. What was the venue?
It was one of the on Fifth Street. There was I can't remember if it was Hefe's, one of those old clubs there. Yeah, that was a memorable show.
Huffman lives with him in D.C.
Yes.
or once lived with him.
I think still currently. I mean, Beto's still in Congress through January 3rd.
Yeah, I'd be home licking my wounds.
One of the things with dirty politics, though, I think there's kind of a spectrum. So. I think it's probably much worse to do something that's like actively misleading. Like if you're trying to make people think that certain ideologies support you when they obviously don't. Like if you take like a few token people and say like, oh, these represent like all Democrats. Like if you're not endorsed by the county Democrats or something like that. I think that's probably a little dirtier of a tactic than using someone's like thing that they actually chose to post. And I'm with Sierra on this. I think that as we go on, it's like, it's going to become less and less of a big deal, like because everybody has posted something that like they're upset of, that could be used against them. Maybe not me, because like I'm not a big social media person, but most people.
There was a candidate too in the Midwest somewhere where like there was some video of him dressed as Darth Vader kegging or something, and the Republicans had tried to. Do you know what I'm talking about?
That was John Ossoff. He was.
That
running,
was awesome.
That was the special election in Georgia last year, which Democrats actually won.
Yeah,
this cycle.
Yeah, it keeps coming up, and it's like. Republicans kind of looked old releasing ads against
him. I mean, but okay, so like that's one thing. But then there were also like there were even worse ads. There was one where they were tying him to so he'd gotten paid for some work by Al Jazeera, and they showed a picture of Bin Laden next to it. It's like,
right, yeah.
That's a little dirtier, I'd say, than maybe a photo or like a video of him being stupid when he was a college student.
And we have the Duncan Hunter ad where he. Yeah. Implies that his opponent is a terrorist,
Muslim terrorist.
And we had stuff from the other side as well. We had a an ad campaign that the Las Coast Outpost reported on that appears to have been put together by a conservative troll that was encouraging progressives to write in Trump or no impeach Trump.
Impeach Trump on every city council race.
Yeah, because none of these people are sufficiently progressive. Which like you haven't met Leslie Castellano if you don't believe that she's sufficiently progressive.
And they were actively putting those around HSU too. There was one right down by the HSU gates until someone took it down.
Nick,
but it was there.
Nick sent me that and I thought it was a joke. I thought he was trolling me and I'm like, this is real.
Yeah, I think it was a joke, but yeah.
We had paid ads as well saying that the current Eureka City Council is in favor of the legalization of methamphetamines and heroin too.
Wait, that was an ad?
That was a paid ad, yeah.
On Facebook, like a promoted post or
something. Yeah, promoted post from Citizens for a Safer Eureka or something like that. Mm-hmm. This was just a crazy election. And I have to admit,
Matt and I have been around a while.
Well, so this was going to be
not,
a,
this was not the
craziest. This was election. Nothing.
Yeah.
So I'm a relative newcomer. I moved here in 2014. So to me, this was crazy. After the spring primaries, where you know, at least in Eureka, the Virginia Bass election, that was incredibly tame. You know, nobody had any. Any knives in their backs at the end of that one, or at least from my perspective as an outside observer. I'm not sure you're a little closer to that election.
I would say it's the tamest of Virginia's elections I've done in the last 12 years.
So is Humboldt County, or do we just have kind of bad, dirty politics here?
I think it's been dirtier. It's been much dirtier, right, Matt?
Yeah. Nothing.
Well, yeah. What's the dirtiest election?
2010, Bonnie Neely ran an ad showing a jet plane saying she flew in a jet with Rob Arkey with cash falling out of it. And we watched this ad and went, are you serious? Are you I could say freaking, right? Are you freaking kidding me? So it kind of goes downhill from there. We could talk about other things people have done over the years, and it's just, Hank, you...
I'm spoiled for choice. Really.
The joke is we can look back and think which ads are actually memorable that you think about that you say, okay, remember that one. So,
all right. Mm-hmm. So maybe we spent enough time on Eureka. Since we have two Brett Watson volunteers, is there anything you all want to say about the Arcata elections? Turned out pretty much how I thought it was going to, which was
they were over 3 months before we voted.
Yeah. And you know, the person who was the incumbent, the true incumbent who had been voted in before, got the most number of votes. That was Sophia Pereira. And then Brett got the second most number of votes. Although, kudos to the Brett Watson campaign, because his signs were just freaking everywhere throughout Eureka.
Brett loves his signs.
Yeah, Brett took care of those signs mm-hmm. every single day.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were, Richard was commenting on that. It was because they were really good sign placements, I think, in particular. So it definitely mm-hmm. got the feel that they were everywhere. And Brett actually ran out of signs, like partway through, had to get more.
And can we talk about Measure M, the McKinley statue? Because
yeah.
I have to ask one question. In the history of the United States, how many presidential statues have been removed?
I'm going to guess zero.
Correct answer is zero until now.
Hey, guys, we're making history. Everyone should give themselves a pat on the back.
And now we're on the slippery slope. What sort of revisionist historian is going to say, George Washington got to be the head of the Continental Army by doing what? Killing Indians. So let's take down the Washington Monument. Let's get rid of Washington, D.C. Let's get rid of the state of Washington because he killed indigenous people.
I think it's the People's Plaza. If the people voted
that.
On it and
but
they don't
happens,
want the statue there.
What happens
it's
if they
not
go
as
after
if
Washington
we destroyed
next?
The statue.
Let's go after Lincoln next. Let's go after Jackson next.
The
let's
statue
go after
can
Kennedy.
Easily move somewhere else. If
I
people want
that.
A place to go
it's
see it.
It's not that. It's the slippery slope I'm talking about. Once we start saying revisionist histories of, well, this guy did something bad 230 years ago, so now we're going to go after his memory. Which person didn't do something bad?
But I think the big question with the McKinley statue, though, was like how well it actually represents like Arcata.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about someone like Arcata was a hotbed for the anti-Iraq war protest. McKinley was president when the American imperialist age really started. I mean, whether or not he was supported by East Coast financiers, I mean, just go down the list. It's like not a whole lot that McKinley did really like rings true for Arcata, and having something like at the center of the plaza, like I didn't personally have like a huge like stake in it. I don't live in Arcata personally. I mean, I was surprised at the margin that it went that Measure M failed by. But yeah, I mean, really nothing about McKinley really represents Arcata. So I think in that sense, having it at the center of the plaza is kind of weird.
And I think should we be trapped in our own infrastructure? I mean, shouldn't people decide be able to decide as times change and as people
That's exactly my point. At what point do we say, let's get rid of the Washington Monument? He did something bad.
I don't know about the slippery slope argument.
The most amusing aspect of all this is all of a sudden, all of these people in Arcata, who I've known forever, all of a sudden, oh, McKinley was a great man. Like the statue's been there for as long as they're as long as they've been alive, as long as they've been in Arcata, and this you know, all of a sudden they're starting to actually think about McKinley. No one ever had that. No one ever really that. Maybe a few weirdos, but no one ever actually like took a time to look at that statue and reflect on William McKinley's acts and deeds throughout his life. It's a goofy statue that's been there and people like it because it's a goofy statue.
I think that's a funny point, though. We should try and find Google data about how many Arcadans looked up McKinley this election.
Yeah, yeah,
and maybe
idea.
It was just a learning experience.
I mean, honestly, it's definitely a learning experience.
We should put up the Alex Stillman statue and just replace it. We're all good.
You know, I'm down with that. I think that Alex Stillman deserves a statue. She kind of ushered in the new era of Arcata politics. You know, honestly, I think that would be great.
That might make more sense.
I am all in favor of it. And Matthew Owen will get the credit at the bottom of the plaque for the Alex Stillman statue in the middle of the Arcata Plaza. So just wait, everyone. So for everyone's reference purposes, at this point, and we have 29,000 votes counted or so, or actually not well, in total in the county. In Arcata, 2,436 people, or 62% of those who voted or who had those their votes counted on Election Day, voted against Measure M. So that looks like it is a pretty solid thing that it's going to go away.
And it'll likely expand a little bit.
Yeah. So that brings me to my next point. We have 24,588 votes left to count, according to John Chiv. Can anything change in the results?
Yes.
Yeah. What could change? Is anything likely to change?
Well, there's two races that are people watching right now just because they're closer to this statistical anomaly, and that's going to be the Humboldt Community Services District. Greg Gardner's got a 103-point lead over, I believe her name, I don't know the name, Desiree...
Davenport,
yeah.
Thank you. And in the Eureka School Board, Fran Taplin's got like a 63-point lead over G. Mario Fernandez.
Fran Taplin is currently leading against Brian Payton.
Brian Payton,
and
okay.
Fran Taplin should win. It's G. Mario Fernandez is currently trailing Wendy Davis.
Wendy Davis, thank you. By how many votes?
I thought it was 63. 62.
Yeah. Okay, so that could change also. And those are about the only two races that are... It's going to be close.
What about at the end of the night? What about Measure K? And can someone give me what Measure K was about so I don't have to talk?
Measure K was the sanctuary county. It'll pass.
It's relatively close. We have 51% of the vote voting for it and 48% voting against. Yeah. So why do we think that it's going to pass? What do we know historically about late breaking ballots?
They seem to trend similar as the polling place voters. So, as Measure K did well with more of the polling place voters, you think a lot of people turning the ballots late will vote similar trends as the polling place voters.
It's not impossible though that it could go the other way.
It has
in the past. And somebody pointed out to me that I didn't even notice it on election night, having that in Eureka's fifth ward, that Kim Burgell, who's sort of the progressive candidate, actually did much better in the early absentee votings than she did at the ballot.
Wow, she'll still win.
Yeah, she'll still win. Yeah, and you know, there's like a remote outside chance. I mean, things, you know, there's still a lot of ballots left to count. There's a remote chance that, say, Measure I could pass in Eureka. Or, you know, there's a very, very, very remote outside chance that things could change in, like, say, Eureka's first ward. Be very remote. I mean, you'd have to have evidence of, you know, a conservative candidate really getting out the vote and taking people to the, you know, their polling place late with the, you know, and same day registration. And I don't think that actually happened.
Although, you know, if Take Back Eureka did have kind of this strong enthusiasm, they're going to be the people who turned in their ballots or voted provisionally. They're going to be the ones to do it. So who knows?
It seems really unlikely. I don't know that there was a big get out the vote, like on the ground operation to do
that. Well, that was the other thing about Measure K. There was really no opposition to it. And there was a huge amount of influx in the favor of the thing. Had someone come out with $10,000 against Measure K, we'd be looking at entirely different numbers.
Mm-hmm. Was that a failure of Humboldt County Conservatives or the Humboldt County Republican Party that they didn't try to nationalize some of these issues to draw out some of their kind of more base supporters?
I would say they could have done better for both Measure K for opposition and for some of their opponents had they done that, yes.
However, nationalizing it might not have been the answer, because then you're going to get a backlash. I mean, Humboldt County, I think, what was it, 33% voted for Trump. So, I mean, more you try to nationalize it, the more you tie it to the National Republican Party, conservative politics, it probably doesn't play well overall in the county. I mean, it might increase support, and in a midterm election, that's
I would have shown the mugshots from the latest Mexican cartel getting arrested over and over. And how many people do you guys show on a weekly basis from Mexico get arrested for selling heroin and all? I would have showed their pictures and said, these people want sanctuary. Do you want that? And I would have pounded that commercial over and over again.
I'm glad that you don't have a pot of money and you're working for the conservatives. Jeez.
If you want to win elections, there's ways to do it. But then again... Yeah.
Is that dirty politics? Have we come full circle now?
Ooh, that makes me squeamish. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if it's dirty.
Is that dirtier politics than putting up a past Facebook post? That's the question.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
All right. So is Eureka now a Democratic stronghold? Can a conservative candidate win a race in Eureka? We have the new ward system.
No doubt.
No doubt?
Frank Yeager never lost a race as a Republican. Lance Mattson won most of his races as a Republican. The problem is a lot of the Republicans were saying earlier, there's an old joke, Fox News ratings are declining. Someone says, why is that? They're dying off.
I mean, that's not a joke. It's not a joke. It's demographic.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is the Republicans as a political base they don't have a message to the younger people today, and I think that's part of the problem.
And I think the other thing, too, you know, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I got the impression that some of the conservative candidates just simply didn't knock as many doors. I don't know if you have an opinion on that, Nick. You saw some of that.
Yeah, there were certainly some candidates who really, really knocked on a lot of doors on the conservative side. But, I mean, for the amount of money they were raising, they were really putting a lot of it into just ads. Like, I was hearing Eureka ads for Anthony Mantova all the way up in Trinidad.
So, and like, a billboard on 101. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, when you raise $25,000 or whatever it was, I mean...
More.
29?
Okay, did it go up? I think the last time I looked, it was 25. But, yeah, I mean, that whole slate had a lot of money behind it. I mean, if they had invested it more into, like, a ground game, maybe that could have played more of a difference.
And a message.
I was going to say, this is, like, the one thing that we didn't note before is that this is the first election under Eureka's new true ward system,
which
was sort of designed, I think, to take the idea was by, you know, his promoter said that we would take the money out of politics because you could just meet all the people in your neighborhood, and that seemed to be the case.
All right, we have a caller.
Yeah, this is from Dana. She wanted to hear your guys' perspective of the Trinidad City Council race.
God, did anyone pay attention to that? Oh, we do have someone.
Nick is a nerd.
I'm not within Trinidad City limits, so I couldn't vote, but I'm just outside, so I did pay attention. I'm curious if there are any outstanding votes, because currently the margin between first place, who's Susan Rotwein, who ran against Pat Higgins a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And the fourth place person, who's Dwight Miller, who's currently on the council, it's like 6 votes.
I thought they were one vote apart.
Well, that's between third and fourth, but between first and fourth is like 6 votes. It's insane. I'm not familiar.
So you're saying every vote counts?
Literally, yeah. So I'm just curious if there are any outstanding votes at this point. I'm assuming
there will definitely be some, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because I mean Trinidad, I think probably a lot more is at the polling place, I guess, within city limits, because it's out right at City Hall, but. There probably are a good number of late-breaking votes. We'll see.
All right. Well, any thoughts on Fortuna now that we have...
I predicted all 3 of those winners, I just want to say.
I think it's 3 candidates.
All right,
there's
3 candidates running. Yeah, thank you. Right. Okay, so going back to the award system, I saw a helpful comment on the Lost Coast Outpost. So, you know... pigs fly sometimes or whatever, hell freezes over. It was that Anthony Mantova, at least at the end of election night, spent over $200 per vote.
Yeah, well, that will, you know, that ratio will go down somewhat because there'll be more votes counted. he will certainly get some more.
He will get some more.
The remaining 25,000 votes are counted. But yeah, you're right. That it was a lot of money per vote.
So he had the influx. He was kind of the true hard conservative candidate. He got the true hard conservative money as supporters. We also had candidates who ran in that same ward with the total opposite philosophy, that they were going to distinguish themselves by being the cheap candidates, by not raising more than $2,000. We had 2 candidates there.
Haley Lamb and Carolyn Brooks.
And together they received more votes cumulatively than Anthony Mantova did. So my question to the group is it possible to win an election as a city councilor in Eureka running a campaign that's less than $2,000?
Yeah, nowadays I would think so. That would be the ward that you would have done it in. I mean, it didn't happen this time, but if you were a really well-known person who had a base of support, you know, a person who has roots and in the neighborhood and that everybody knows, you know, a school crossing guard, something along those lines.
A Matthew Owen.
And he's actually accomplished something in the community.
Matt lives
in the community. Oh, so that's not Matthew then.
The thing I'll say, it helps out if you get the machine behind you. Yes. Let's be honest about that. Even though I'm going to say nothing against Leslie Castellano, even though she's a Green Party person, she had most of the Democratic machine behind her.
Besides the Democratic Party itself.
besides the Humboldt County Democratic Central Committee can only endorse Democratic candidates. Although the Humboldt County Republican Central Committee, Hank, endorsed...
They endorsed a no-party person over a Republican.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think there's something to be said to just getting out and talking to folks. You know, Richard Marx spent a lot of time going door-to-door in Arcata. Brett Watson spent a lot of time. Sophia spent a lot of time. And I think, you know, I did some door-to-door and talking to voters, and you can get votes that way if you put in the time. Just, you know, that might be my naivete, but...
No, I think it's right. And especially, I mean, that was the philosophy of the True Word system. You know, you have a limited number of people. It's totally possible to meet them all.
I know that Kim says that she knocked on every door. Leslie said that between her and her volunteers, I believe they knocked on every door at least two times.
I think Kim knocked every door twice.
Oh,
and I think Leslie knocked...
Three.
Between her volunteers, I think she had knocked every other door twice, like weeks before the election, I believe.
So is the True Ward system, is it good? Are y'all supporters now, having seen it in action for one election? And maybe I can exempt you because you're a reporter, so maybe you don't want to say these sorts of things.
No, I think I've already said that it's a little bit crazy, I think. Uh-huh. I think Eureka is like a little too small. I think that... It would make more sense. I mean, the old system that Eureka had was double bonkers. But like, I think it's a small enough city that like general elections should probably be the way. Because we'll see what happens now. The effects of having your city council divided geographically like this, where you represent not the city, but one polity, one area of the city. I mean... You would expect there to be a little bit more inter-council bickering over, you know, bringing home the goods to your particular neighborhood. That's what you're going to be judged on. Those are the people who are going to judge you. So we'll see how. I don't know exactly how it's going to play out, but that was always, you know, sort of the reasonable critique from people who oppose the True Word system, is that you're gonna balkanize the city, and that I can easily see that happening.
And we had some complaints within Ward 1 of carpet bagging, for maybe a lack of a better term, where Caroline Brooks claimed that she was the only longtime resident of that ward, and why would you vote for anybody who just moved to the ward?
Yeah.
And it apparently it wasn't an effective argument, as she got 64 votes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And the one thing I want to say, I was disappointed with Anthony Mantova post-election, who said, a lot of my supporters were disappointed when they went to the election booth and found out they couldn't vote for me because they didn't live in Ward 1. Oh, I'm like, you didn't educate your supporters? We kept saying that Anthony's got a lot of signs over by the zoo, which is the east side of town, where he was running in the west side of town. And if you can't get out and educate your base supporters, your voters, I'm not sure what you're doing running for office.
Okay. If you were to draft a candidate, a perfect candidate for Eureka, what does that candidate now look like, having had this election? Let's say it's for mayor citywide. Are they a Democrat? Are they declined to state?
Well, you asked earlier if Eureka is a Democratic stronghold now, and I always thought it was a bit of a mistake to try to map national party onto Humboldt County politics. It's the Republicans endorsed, like as we said, Jeannie Breslin, a no declined to state voter, over an actual Republican voter. There, Marion Brady who ran sort of a conservative side campaign, is a Democrat. It's more Eureka politics, especially Humboldt County generally, is more about like sort of, I don't know how to, gangs maybe than party. Yeah, calling somebody a Democrat in Eureka, it doesn't tell you much about how they're going to vote on local issues. So that
might be fair, but we do at least have more Democrats. Well, not quite a majority, but at least voting in the June primary, as you reported here, printout.
Yeah, we have more Democrats, but those Democrats, you know, Frank Yeager has been mayor for 8 years. You know, the Eureka Democrats are a different breed. You know, they're not.
It's not a monolith.
Yeah, it's not a monolith. They will break differently on local issues, very differently sometimes.
And the one thing I want to say is, in the June primaries, the 4th district had a 35% turnout. And yet this time here in the general election, it was 69% countywide. And I just want to thank the people who did go out and vote. Because when you go from, I mean, this is like you're saying, what Texas did, almost double the votes over 2014. So... One thing Trump did, whether you like Trump or don't like Trump, he's getting people engaged in the political process. And I always appreciate when someone get off the couch and vote. And I want to say thank you to everyone out there who did vote this last November.
That means a lot, Matt. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I would like to see a young, and maybe another Natalie Arroyo or a Haley Lamb, like a young female Democrat full of energy knocking on every door. I think that could be really successful in one of the Eureka Awards. And I think, you know, Natalie Arroyo came to the HSU College Democrats meeting, and she just told us some horrific stories of what it was like to run as a younger female. She wasn't even as young as Haley Lamb was when she first ran. And just some of the stories that she was saying of running as a female in Eureka and being belittled, you know, in certain ways because of, you know, her gender was, you know.
Yeah, there's plenty of cranks. I mean, she won every precinct in the city the first time she ran. So
she was successful. Oh, for sure. Yeah, she was successful. But I think another candidate like that could be successful.
Well, so we had all women win. Is this a reflection of the Me Too movement, or am I again trying to nationalize something that...
I think so, because back in 2016, we had the entire Eureka City Council was female, and that was before Me Too, right?
Yeah, and Tom, we have to point out, in 2020, Rex Bone will be running for re-election in the first district, and Rex takes up a good chunk of Eureka, Pine Hill, Humboldt Hill, Cutton. And Rex is a declined estate, although people might say otherwise. But if you want to run against Rex, good luck, because he owns the first district.
All right. Well, we have 5 minutes remaining. Let's do some meaningless speculation on the 2020 supervisors' races. Should Estelle or Rex be worried?
It depends on who runs against them.
Okay, that's a terrible answer.
I mean, but that's how a lot of races go.
That's not an engaging radio answer.
Can I, once again, I'm going to go back to Willie Brown, the former mayor of San Francisco. It says, every politician fantasizes about two things, to run unopposed or to run against a weak opponent. And that's probably what Nick's trying to say. If you have a weak opponent out there, you just kind of go, I can go kick back, drink a beer, put the remote in one hand, versus if you've got a well-named Wool Finance person, you're on knocking doors 4 or 5 days a week, a couple hours a night, 8 hours in every weekend. You're at every public event. You have no life. You're raising money 9 months, probably 3 years in advance. It's work. And don't forget the most important thing, the March primary in 2000, it's going to move it up to March from June. So do you want anyone knocking your door between Thanksgiving and Christmas? It's going to be pretty much January, February, first week in March. You got 2 months and a week to get a campaign done.
And also, I mean, it gets dark early, like around then. I mean, you're not going to have as much daylight to knock doors.
But seriously, if you're having a Christmas celebration with the family, someone knocks on your door, you're going to look at them, what the heck are you doing here? Slam.
So you have to carol.
Well, so... So should Estelle or Rex be more worried? Should one of them be more worried than the other? Personally, hearing from Epic supporters in Southern Humboldt County, Estelle doesn't seem like she is can maintain one of her bases that got her elected the first time around. And looking at Fortuna's in her district, right? She seems to be pissing off Sue Long and all those folks pretty well too with her support of cannabis projects, and they have come out with a pretty prohibitionist stance on cannabis projects. So I feel like Estelle might be in the crosshairs.
There's a dichotomy there. Exactly what you said. Fortuna is 100% against anything cannabis.
Yep.
Don't know why. Hank, you do the arrest reports daily. How many people get arrested for alcohol-related incidences on a daily basis?
Yeah, lots.
And then now South Humboldt's angry because they put rules and regulations and taxes on us. Oh, my God. It's not the Wild West here anymore.
Yeah, so I think 70% of the second district electorate is Fortuna, Eel River Valley. You know, Southern Humboldt's kind of like a sort of like rump part of the district, and that was at one time Estelle's base. But yeah, cannabis has sort of turned. She's neither fish nor fowl. You know, she pisses off kind of both sides in that debate in some ways.
Because we're a bunch
of... Through no fault of her own. Like, well, I don't know. It's a tough structural issue to try to... It's a strange circle to square.
Does anybody have any rumored candidates that they want to throw out here?
I don't have any rumored candidates. Do you have rumored candidates?
Are you going to say it or should I?
You can.
In the second district or the first district?
Estelle's.
No, I don't know. Do you have...
I don't know the Fortuna candidate they're proposing. I've heard they're...
I've only heard it word of mouth, so I'm not going to speculate.
Okay. All right. None of us are going to be
first district. He's told everyone he's running against Rex. You want to mention that name?
Well, yeah, I heard that Alan McCloskey is going to run.
Oh, no.
That wasn't me.
That was me. I don't think that Alan McCloskey will win. And as a progressive Democrat, I want progressive Democrats to win. So, so we're getting near the end of the show. Does anyone have any last thoughts on what this election means going forward? Do we have a mandate for progressive values in Eureka?
Yeah, I mean, and it depends on how you define progressive, probably, but I think people have generally liked the direction the city has been moving. I don't know if you'd call that progressive necessarily, but I think people like, the downtown, old town revitalization. They like that the direction that the Eureka Police Department has been moving. I think that if that's progressive, then I think there is a mandate for that.
Does the change, if it is a change in Eureka, does that mean that Virginia Bass is going to have a different tact in this next supervisor's election or in this next supervisor term, the next 4 years, with Sun Gnome and Mike Wilson to her left?
I wonder.
I wonder.
If only there was an insider here to tell what's on Virginia Bass.